Good afternoon. I will call to order this remote meeting of the House Commerce Committee and ask Mr. Brown to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Present.
Vice Chair Cotizza-Witum.
Here.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Present.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Carlson.
Carlson, present.
Thank you. Representative Dabney.
Dabney, present.
Representative Elkins.
Present.
Representative Haley.
Present.
Representative Cagle.
Here.
Representative Lee.
Lee, present.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly, present.
Representative Liz Lagarde.
Liz Lagarde, present.
Representative Lucero.
After I win the lottery, then I will have a pot of gold.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Farr.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Richardson, excused. Representative Tice.
Present.
All right, we have a quorum, at least until Representative Gomez puts a provision in the tax bill to seize Representative Lucero's lottery winnings, which I will get to work on.
Mr. Chair, he could keep his identity private, though, after we move forward with the bill.
Not in that outfit.
The first item on our agenda is approval of our minutes from our last meeting. Vice Chair Cotizza-Witum, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would move the March 16th minutes.
All right, any discussion to the Cotizza-Witum motion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes from March 16th, 2021 are approved. We have a full agenda first. We are going to call a little bit of an audible, I think, it sounds like, and go to Representative Wasilewicz's bill, House File 1165. Oh, never mind. I'm wrong. Now we do have, we weren't sure if we had the good Dr. Morrison, but apparently she is here. So we will do House File 669. Welcome to the committee, Representative Morrison. I will move House File 669 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Health, Finance, and Policy. Representative Morrison, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I thought I was mid-committee hearing, so sorry for the delay. Thanks for the opportunity for me to present House File 669. This is an important bill that improves patient access to healthcare by streamlining provider credentialing. My testifier will explain more about what credentialing is and how it works and why this change is so important. But I do know firsthand that the delay in the credentialing process is harmful to patients because it creates an unnecessary shortage in healthcare providers. Patients could be forced to choose to delay care or see another provider, which needlessly takes away choice and can impact care. Briefly, this is what House File 669 does. The bill is effective in addressing the need to streamline healthcare provider credentialing across payers, which all agreed is needed. It creates a definition for provider credentialing, which has never otherwise been defined by the legislature. It creates a standard and fair timeline for health plans to complete provider credentialing, which is 45 days from the date a clean application is received. It outlines what a clean application for provider credentialing is and what is done if a health plan determines that an application for provider credentialing is not deemed clean. Provides a timeline for the provider to submit additional information. And finally, it provides a transparent effective date, allowing patients to be scheduled proactively in a reasonable and fair timeline. I am grateful to the Minnesota Medical Group Management Association who brought the bill to me, they were very helpful in working through compromise language with the plans. I believe that we finally have peace in the valley on this issue, and there is a representative from MMGMA to give additional testimony. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Morrison. I do have Brenda Reinhart on the list. Ms. Reinhart.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Brenda Reinhart. I'm the business office manager at Vitreo Retinal Surgery, a $14 doctor ophthalmology group that has 8 locations here in the state of Minnesota. Today, I'm representing the Minnesota Medical Group Management Association's Government Affairs Committee. In addition, I am the Payer Relations Committee Chair, also for the Minnesota Medical Group Management Association. First, I would like to thank Representative Morrison for authoring the bill. I would also like to thank Representative Richardson for co-authoring the bill. Provider credentialing is the process that health plans use to evaluate a healthcare provider's education, training, residency, licenses, and certifications in order for that healthcare provider to provide healthcare services to patients at a clinic or a facility and to be reimbursed by that payer. Payer contracts generally do not allow healthcare providers to practice medicine or see patients while they await the credentialing process. Currently, the process of credentialing a provider varies between health plans and takes somewhere between 60, 90, 120 days or longer to complete the process. Each payer does this individually and with varying requirements and timelines. This affects a patient's care as they cannot see the provider during the credentialing period and must either wait until the process is complete or find a different provider. This is also an administrative burden to the healthcare providers and clinics because of the varying processes and lengthy timelines as they have to track status with each payer and cannot schedule until the provider is approved and given an effective date. The result is that there can be multiple effective dates across payers, which can be a scheduling headache for the clinic and for the patient. In addition to the varied processes and timelines across payers, there's little transparency in the process. It varies from payer to payer, and in our fact gathering, issues were found across most of the commercial payers. Some examples include the requested date of participation will not be confirmed up front in the process, which means a clinic does not know when the provider can start to see patients. Also, if the requested date is given, it is typically confirmed well after the effective date. Recently, a clinic received a confirmation of December 1, 2020 effective date. However, they didn't receive written notification until January 22nd, 2021, despite many status update requests during the application time. This application was submitted on October 1st, 8 weeks before the requested start date. The actual turnaround time was just under 4 months. This is impactful, because clinics cannot start to schedule patients until the effective participation date is known. Payer contracts do not allow patients to be seen until the date is received in writing. This is extremely problematic when a group has a surgeon ready to start or call or regular call at the hospital. It is ironic when the hospital has already completed their credentialing and have approved privileges. Now we're just waiting for the payer to approve. If the provider starts to see patients at the hospital before this time, not only will they potentially be in violation of the payer contract, but the payer will not get reimbursed for the emergency services provided. The communication during this process with the payers. Oftentimes, only a department email address is provided with no ability to reach a live person to ask questions or resolve issues. Email requests for status updates often go unanswered. We are often directed by the payers to use their web portals to check the status. These portals do not actually have status updates and are typically only updated after the process completed. Again, this direction is not helpful. Sometimes the email answer from the payer is to watch for an email for the effective date or wait for a letter via the snail mail. Again, no opportunity to ask when this may be expected. Payers may state that the timeframes are not adhered to. For example, they may state that the process takes 60 days, when in actual time, it extends much further out over the 60, 90, or 120 days. The Government Affairs Committee started to review and discuss the problems and inequities in the provider credentialing process with payers back in 2016 and collected real-time examples of the above issues. We've shared these examples with the Council of Health Plans. They were very sympathetic to our issues. We had a great dialogue with them, and we got them to a place of comfort and understanding with the language. Again, thank you, Dr. Morrison, for authoring this bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. There are no further testifiers, and no one from the public signed up to testify on this bill, so we will now move to member discussion and questions. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. Thank you, Representative Morrison, for bringing this forward. And I just have a couple clarifications. I support the bill, and I actually chaired a hospital board for a number of years, and I remember this situation causing a lot of anxiety when we were trying to hire new providers, and as you said, had patients waiting to see those providers. Can you clarify for me so I can clear the scope of this? It applies to plans, but is it also the same credentialing process for all providers, hospitals, and clinics? And can you just talk us through as committee that process?
Representative Haley, I'm sorry, did you ask that question of Ms. Reinhart or of Representative Morrison?
Representative Morrison.
Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Haley. I think that Ms. Reinhart would be best able to respond to the question.
Ms. Reinhart?
Thank you. Yes, I think that this is for sure within the plans. We're just asking that we have common language that describes what the what a clean credentialing application is, and that we ask that it be completed once you receive it within 45 days. This bill does not address the hospital's privileging application.
Representative Haley.
Thank you for that clarification. That's what I was looking for. Providers are still credentialed by the hospitals.
Yes,
that process stands.
Absolutely.
This does not interfere with that. This is related to plans.
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Reinhart. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Representative Elkins.
I just, more of an observation, I actually worked on this problem for United Healthcare's network about 10 years ago, and it's actually a very interesting IT problem because, as I recall, you credential practitioners, and a practice basically inherits its credentials from the individual practitioners that practice there, which makes it a very interesting problem at the practice level. But I'm glad you're bringing this forward. This is a problem that definitely requires some standardization.
Thank you.
I see no further members seeking recognition, so I will give Representative Morrison the opportunity to give closing comments.
Members, for the opportunity to hear this bill. This has been something we've been working on for several years, and this will aid in access to care and will streamline the entire process. So grateful for the opportunity, and again, thank you for that clarification, Representative Haley. That was an important one. Much thanks to the MMGMA for their help in this as well.
All right. And with that, I will renew the motion that House File 669 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Health, Finance, and Policy. Mr. Brown will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Katisa Watoon.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
O'Driscoll, aye.
Representative Barr.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Representative Daphne.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
Aye.
Representative Haley.
Aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Representative Liz Lagarde. Representative Lucero.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Representative Richardson, excused, and Representative Tice.
Tice, aye.
With 16 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 669 is recommended to be referred to the Committee on Health, Finance, and Policy. Thank you, Representative Morrison. We will next move to House File 1165. And welcome back, Representative Wasilick. Before we get into this bill, just a reminder to the committee, we're taking up two bills today that we actually heard last week and laid over. They're a little bit different in where we left off on them, so we're going to handle them just a little bit differently each. This bill, we took public testimony to the underlying bill, so I said there would be no additional testimony except for to any amendment that was brought, and we'll handle the amendment in a minute. But we did not get to member discussion and questions on the bill, and so happy to have member discussions on questions to the bill generally today. On the other bill, we did have a very lengthy discussion and debate to the bill, so we will just be voting on the other bill, but we'll get to that when we get to it. So first is House File 1165, previously laid over. I will move House File 1165 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Wasilick, you have an author's amendment labeled A2. I will move the A2 amendment, and would you please describe it?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the A2 amendment does a few things.
It reinstates the language about manufacturer, distributor, or wholesaler that was taken out of the bill, and then clarifies that the language that added person, it adds knowingly in there, so that that to hopefully address some of those concerns that retailers were saying about, you know, if we're selling these products on our shelves and we don't know. So the intent of that language is to make sure that there's an opportunity if retailers do not know that they're selling a product that doesn't meet this definition, that the MPCA is able to have a conversation with them about that so that they're able to remove those products and not have any issues going forward. So that knowingly language is added in a couple places. And then it does take out some language that has to do with color tinting of products. This is a provision that MPCA has indicated would be difficult for them to enforce. And it's also not widely adopted in other states that have put this language into statute. So we're taking it out just for ease of trying to enforce that language. And then a couple tweaks to subdivision 2A, again, adding that language back in that was taken out, the knowingly language, and then clarifying a little bit of that certification language. So that's what the amendment does.
All right, thank you for that explanation. Is there any discussion to the A2 author's amendment? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Aye. The motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted. Discussion to the bill as amended. Do members have questions or discussion to the bill as amended? Here, I don't see anyone, so I will ask Representative Wasilick if she wants to give any closing comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for the opportunity to have this bill before you. And I think we sort of already heard why we need this bill, but it's a really important piece to ensure that consumers know what they're buying, but also to ensure that the end process, when this goes to landfills or compost facilities, that we're really making sure that it's supposed to be there and that it is compostable and we're not creating problems on the back end. So appreciate your support for this bill as it goes forward. I think it makes some common sense changes to this language to make sure that folks know what they're buying and that we have high quality compost on the end. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Wasilick. I will renew my motion that House File 1165 as amended be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Mr. Brown will take the roll and the chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Katuzawatun.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll. Representative Barr. Representative Carlson.
O'Driscoll votes no.
Thank you. Representative Carlson. Representative Daphne.
Daphne votes aye.
Representative Elkins.
Elkins votes aye.
Representative Haley.
No.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye. People, but some of those.
Representative Lucero.
It's because of
no.
The acquisition. So it's even fewer than that.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
No.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Representative Tice.
No.
I'll ask again. Representative Barr.
No.
Representative Carlson.
With 8 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 1165, as amended, is recommended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Wasilick. Our next bill is one of mine, so I will pass the virtual gavel to Vice Chair Katuzawatun.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All right. So next up, we have House File 1667. Chair Stevenson, would you like to move your bill?
I would move House File 1667 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Chair Stevenson, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House File 1667 is a relatively straightforward bill. It appropriates $400,000 in both years of the upcoming biennium to the Commissioner of Commerce to grant to Prepare and Prosper for a financial services inclusion program. Prepare and Prosper has worked with the department for many years on this program, which is designed to help underserved populations build savings and strengthen credit. I think that this program is particularly important right now. We've heard a lot about the K-shaped economy, recovery and how people of lesser means have really struggled in this recession. and during the pandemic. And so I think there couldn't be a better time for us to be funding such a program. And I hope we can continue our partnership with Prepare and Prosper, serving those Minnesotans. Madam Chair, I do have a testifier.
Very good. Mr. Chair, would you like to introduce your testifier?
I believe I have Ann Leland Clark.
Very good. Ms. Clark, could you introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony?
Great. Thank you. Greetings. My name is Ann Leland Clark. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ann Leland Clark, and I am the Financial Capability Director at Prepare and Prosper. We're a nonprofit focused on financial health and economic justice. We're based in the Twin Cities. We do work statewide. I really appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of House File 1667, a bill to support FAIR, which is a financial solution for the 328,000 Minnesota households who are financially marginalized and spending a lot of their time and money operating in a financial world not well designed to fit their financial needs. I want to particularly thank Chair Stevenson and for carrying this bill, and Representative Dabney and Lilly for your previous support of this work. In Minnesota, like many other gaps, we're dealing with a financial inclusion gap where about 40% of financially underserved households are households of color compared to just 10% of white households. As many of you know, operating outside of the financial mainstream comes at a high cost. Research shows that someone without a bank account can end up paying over $40,000 in interest and fees over the course of their financial lifetime. Additionally, we see very similar inequities when it comes to credit. A recent study shows that 29% Minnesotans of color had a subprime credit rating, which is below 600, while that overall that number is 12% statewide. As many of us know, access to basic bank accounts and affordable credit not only helps family weather immediate storms and take advantage of short-term liquidity, but is a gateway to wealth-building investments that provide longer-term financial stability. So the FAIR program, that stands for Financial Access in Reach, is designed to bridge this financial inclusion gap, helping people move from those wealth-stripping financial products and services to mainstream bank accounts that protect and build wealth. FAIR is co-designed and co-branded. It's a financial solution in partnership with Sunrise Banks. It consists of a checking, a savings, and a credit-building account that are all offered to work with people's financial realities with no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and regardless of somebody's banking and credit history, to name a few features. FAIR is unique not only in its product design, but in its delivery model. FAIR attempts to address the trust gap that exists between historically marginalized communities and financial institutions by embedding programming and access through community-driven distribution model. For example, FAIR is not only offered at Prepare and Prosper, but in the community at Better Futures, Build Wealth Minnesota, Hired, Twin Cities Rise, and Community Action Partnership of Ramsey and Washington Counties, to name some of our partners. Mm-hmm. With this funding, we will continue to work in partnership with Sunrise Banks and with the Department of Commerce to expand into Greater Minnesota and into communities and systems like workforce, community action, reentry, youth employment, and tribal communities, to name a few. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you again for this opportunity to testify about the FAIR initiative and the ways you can support, your support can help stabilize and transform people's financial lives. And I would be happy to take questions.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Leland Clark. Is there, members, is there any discussion on House File 1667? Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, and reading this over, it's not clear to me, I'm familiar that Sunrise Bank started a lot of this work and has done great work in the community, but is this program, Prepare and Prosper, then brand new that the legislature would be funding in your proposal, Representative Stevenson? So we're creating a new program?
Chair Stevenson?
Madam Chair, Representative Haley, I will defer to Ms. Leland Clark, but I do not believe it is a new program, no.
Ms. Leland Clark.
Madam Chair, Representative Haley, that's a very important question, a good question. So no, this is actually a partnership that we launched together in 2018 formally with Sunrise Banks. And so this is a continuation and a scaling of a currently existing FAIR program.
Representative Haley, follow up.
Thank you very much, Ms. Leland Clark. However, would this be the first time that the legislature would be appropriating money then to the program? Or did we appropriate money when you launched it before? Can you clarify that, please?
Ms. Leland Clark.
I can actually clarify that.
Chair Stevenson.
Representative Haley, no, this is an item that's in the commerce-based budget. We have appropriated this funds before.
Can you tell us, Chair? Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell us, Chair Stevenson, what was appropriated in the past?
I believe it's the same amount. I believe it was $400,000 a year for, over the course of the biennium, 2 years.
Okay. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson. And just for the other members, the financial literacy really is an important issue, I think, for the legislature this year. I know there are a number of bills moving through to have financial literacy programs for women of color. We just heard that in a committee earlier today, but also in high schools. I think it's something that we're recognizing that regardless of race or ethnicity, a lot of young people come out of high school lacking these skills. And so going downstream too, I'm very much a supporter of us getting that into our high schools, and maybe we can solve some of the problem on the front end as well. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Haley. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that was a great segue to my question. So as I at least from my notes here, it's my understanding that Prepare and Prosper as a nonprofit helps low to moderate income individuals file taxes, save for emergencies, reduce debt, build wealth, and then Representative Haley just referenced financial literacy, which is where my question was going to go. And my question would be probably for the testifier, since much of the testimony was given of underserved or traditionally underserved communities. What is the root cause? What is causing adults in later stages of their life to have financial illiteracy, thus requiring the legislature to step in and enact this type of policy?
Chair Stevenson?
I think
well, that question was for the testifier.
Was for the testifier.
My apologies, Ms. Leland Clark.
Madam Chair, my apologies. What an awful time for my internet to be unstable. Tis the world. But I caught the end, Representative Lucero. So let me respond to the end of what I heard as your question around what is causing, that sort of linear from high school to adulthood. And really, it's a lot of systems. So it is the overdraft. It is the design of a lot of systems like the credit system and an account overdraft and minimum balance requirements. So in many ways, what is causing sort of adults to fall out of, the financial mainstream is oftentimes the design, product design, and systems like credit and banking. So folks, they might lose their job temporarily and have to close their bank accounts because they can no longer afford them, or have to walk away from those fees that punish you when you do lose your job, like overdraft and minimum balance. So when we think about banking, that is what's happening often, it is sort of a systemic design flaw in a lot of accounts. Where people are falling out of the financial mainstream and having to leave their bank account relationships behind. And I think many of you all know that to damage credit, it's very easy, and to build it back up. And it's based on, a privilege of learning about a lot of these behaviors in a generational approach. And, what I hear time and time again from our customers is, I didn't learn about credit until somebody was peddling, credit cards or high interest loans. I didn't learn about it until I was able to do damage. So a lot of it is, passed down generationally as well. I hope that answered at least what I caught at the end, Representative Lucero.
Representative Lucero, do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I agree with that. I think that financial literacy obviously is a learned, and I very much appreciate how that was worded. Financial systems and people, if they lack information, because we know knowledge is power, and if people lack the knowledge and they make decisions to open up accounts or enter into the various types of financial products that do result in these large overdraft fees, or depending on the product, People do need to be educated. And I think Representative Haley was spot on. I think a lot of this does and should and is lacking in high school to empower people with that information. And so kind of the dots that I'm connecting is what high schools are not teaching this type of financial literacy. Is there a pattern that we see in perhaps geographic school districts that were not teaching financial literacy? Because if I were to look at Minneapolis-St. Paul, we do know that those school districts are struggling in many different areas, graduation rates, one of the metrics. And is there a commonality with financial illiteracy, which then as people leave those school districts from their high school age and go into adulthood, they have that lack of information, they don't have that knowledge, and therefore that gets them into this trap. And so when it's frustrating that we have to step in and essentially make up for the gaps of knowledge that people should have gotten when they were in high school, I guess is the overall point that I'm trying to make. So, but I do appreciate the conversation. Thank you.
Representative Davney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since we like to collect people's past employment in this committee, I spent 5 years teaching personal finance for one of the major Minnesota nonprofits, including working with clients at Prepare and Prosper. Great organization. Mr. Chair, thank you for carrying this bill. They do remarkable work. Ms. Leland Clark was both very accurate in her response to Representative Lucero's question. I would only add financial literacy can be a particular challenge for immigrants who may have come from a different economic system, different credit system, things like that, where they come over as adults and just simply don't have the experience or the knowledge base here. As well as those with good credit from or equivalent in the countries they came from, that information doesn't transfer. They start over at the bottom of the pack. But we also have to remember that what we like to do here, reasonably successful people, is generally the legislature is made of, is substitute personal finance literacy for the economy. And unless the main problem around financial literacy is that too many people don't make enough money to live on and support their families in a way they can thrive. We've got growing financial inequality in this country. All the personal finance education in the world doesn't change being an exploited worker. We've got huge gaps in wealth by race in this country. All the financial literacy in the world doesn't change multi-generational, institutional, systemic, racist practices that still resonate and impact BIPOC members of our community today. We've allowed historically exploitative structures to occur and be set up and implemented. Look at the Great Recession, which was created by banks and non-bank lenders exploiting low knowledge and low income borrowers for houses and using racist practices in the process. Financial literacy doesn't make up for exploitative practices by lenders or employers, and it doesn't make up for exploitative salary and benefit packages for workers. So more financial literacy, certainly good, but until we get to places where people make enough money, there's a certain amount of trying to paddle upstream that we're not going to win. We need to deal with the systemic racism and inequality that impacts too many Minnesotans' lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Davney. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you guys can get your lists going. I used to work at a community action agency that administered these Prepare and Prosper programs. And so I was actually the volunteer coordinator there, so I was able to tap students and people interested in becoming accountants and things like that to get them trained in these programs, get them certified to be a tax preparer. And so we were giving them job training, but then at the same time, we put, I think the last year I was there was over $200,000 back into the community just from our site alone. And so what we're doing is we're setting people up to, you know, with a base to have that, you know, we're giving them a small amount of money back, maximizing their tax refunds, and then paired with that financial literacy, giving them a good base to kind of get going. And so it's really great to see these programs work practically, not only for the experience they give people, but for the money they return to the community. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was hoping that we wouldn't go there, but unfortunately we did. That the financial illiteracy now is being blamed on racism. And if that were an actually true statement, it's my understanding that many of these financial institutions, many of the practices are common across the financial world. They're not unique to financial institutions in Minnesota nor the United States. These concepts are practiced around the world. And if we're going to now blame financial illiteracy on racism, as we just heard in this lecture, which is very unfortunate, then we would see this as a unique outcome in Minnesota. But that is not the case, because we have this problem of financial illiteracy across the world, regardless of the financial system that we're in or that people are in. And that being the case, I guess, are we going to blame in other countries that it's also racism? Clearly, no, that's not the case. There is something that's going on here, and financial illiteracy is indeed a problem, but it is not the root cause of racism. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Stevenson.
Yeah, I wanted just to say that I really appreciated the excellent remarks of the Education Finance Chair. I think he took the committee to school and really laid it out very well. I also wanted to note that I think this is an important discussion, and that's why next week we will be having an entire hearing on the economic cost of systemic racism, and Dr. Corey will be coming to talk to us. And so I think we can have a continue this conversation, which is extremely important to this committee, to the legislature, and to Minnesota as a whole as to what underlies the economic disparities that we see in Minnesota and the role that race has in that. And I disagree pretty strongly with what Representative Lucero was just saying, and I don't know that the idea that looking at other countries in the world disproves Representative Dabney's point holds water at all, but it's certainly a conversation that we should have and can continue to have next week as well. And please don't take my comment as saying, you know, we shouldn't be having this conversation now. We should have it next week. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, I think this is such an important conversation that we're going to do a whole hearing on it next week.
Representative Dabney, you did have your hand up.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't want to drag things out here, but Representative Lucero, perhaps you weren't listening when I was speaking. I didn't say that financial literacy wasn't important. What I'm saying is financial literacy doesn't substitute for systemic racist practices today or in the past that continue to have a multi-generational impact. Bottom line is we can provide all the financial literacy we want. If somebody doesn't make enough money, all the financial literacy in the world doesn't change that. And let's just, to give you one example to draw it out, and then I'll close, Madam Chair, I appreciate this. But during the Great Recession, researchers at the University of Minnesota looked at mortgage lending practices in Hennepin and Ramsey counties as an example. And what they found was that an African-American borrower looking for a mortgage was 50% more likely to be tracked into a subprime loan with higher expenses, higher interest rate than a white borrower with the same credit score. That's a racist practice. And once you're locked into that mortgage, you experience that racist practice in lending every month on about the first of the month. So thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify, financial literacy doesn't substitute for inequality. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Dabney. All right, I'm not seeing any additional hands. Any further discussion on House File 1667? All right, not seeing any. Chair Stephenson, would you like to make any closing comments before renewing your motion?
It's a good bill. Prepare and Prosper is a good program. Please vote for it.
Good. Chair Stephenson renews his motion that House File 1667 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Stephenson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Cotizza-Latoon.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Barr.
No.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Representative Haley. Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Representative Lislegard.
Mr. Chair, out of respect for not hearing the testimony, I pass.
Representative Lucero.
No.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
Representative Richardson. Representative Tice.
Aye.
Just making sure I didn't miss anybody here. And Representative Haley.
Haley, aye.
There being 14 ayes and 2 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 1667 is recommended to be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Next, we have House File 2024. Chair Stephenson, would you like to move your next bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move House File 2024 be recommended to be placed on the General Register.
Chair Stephenson moves House File 2024 to be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Chair Stephenson, to your bill.
Members, this is the Department of Commerce technical bill. And actually, if you don't mind, can we take the author's amendment now?
Yes, very good. It looks like author's amendment labeled A5. Chair Stephenson, please go ahead and move and describe that A5 amendment.
I would move the A5 amendment, which is an author's amendment. And the reason why I wanted to do it now is it's a good illustration of how this bill works. This is a bill that the Commerce Department puts together of non-controversial provisions. And if an item is, if any stakeholder objects to an item, it is removed. So it stays non-controversial. And so the A5 amendment removes some sections that were that stakeholders objected to. It makes a change to another section in order to keep that section non-controversial. And it gets the bill in the shape I'd like the committee to consider it.
Okay. Members, any discussion to the A5 amendment, which gets the bill in the shape the author would like? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Very good. The motion prevails and the A5 amendment is adopted. Chair Stephenson, to your bill as amended.
So thank you, Madam Chair. And as I alluded, this is the Department technical bill. It is a bill full of non-controversial technical changes that are necessary to ensure the continued good operation of our exceptional Commerce Department. And so I do have a testifier here, the temporary Commissioner Grace Arnold, who can speak to the particulars of the bill.
Okay. Commissioner Arnold, please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Cotizza-Watune and members. For the record, I'm Grace Arnold. I'm the temporary commissioner of the Department of Commerce. I'd like to thank Chair Stevenson, Representative Stevenson, for authoring this bill. As he mentioned, it makes a variety of technical changes, clarifies some current practices, provides federal conformity of certain definitions, and updates outdated provisions like references to mail-in applications when we don't take applications anymore. So again, it's meant to be non-controversial, we have worked with impacted industries, and if they have concerns, we just pull the provision. And so, you know, I'm happy to go through section by section. When I presented this in the Senate, they politely declined a section by section walkthrough, so I'll leave it up to you. but it is changes, as I said, you know, some cases, like there are two dates that are confusing and we get a lot of questions. And so we're just clarifying statute to make sure that, you know, it's clear what's expected of our regulated industries or professions, and that we can, you know, focus on doing the good work that we would do.
Thank you for that, Commissioner. Members, does anyone have any specific questions about section by section walkthrough, or who just want to proceed right to discussion? Seeing none, we'll just move right on to discussion. Does anyone have any questions for Commissioner Arnold or Chair Stevenson on House File 2024? Also seeing none, I will give it back to you, Chair Stevenson. Any closing comments before you renew your motion?
It's a good bill. Please vote for it.
Good. Chair Stevenson renews his motion that House File 2024 be amended, as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Aye.
Vice Chair Petizza-Watoon.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Aye.
Representative Barr.
Aye.
Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Representative Dabney.
Dabney, aye.
Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Representative Haley.
Haley, aye.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard, aye.
Representative Lucero.
Yes.
Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, aye.
And Representative Tice. Representative Tice.
There being 16 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails, and the Commerce Committee recommends that House File 2024, as amended, be placed on the general register. Finally, I will hand the gavel back to Chair Stevenson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. You were so good at managing those bills that we are running ahead of schedule. And we have one bill left on the calendar. And, you know, members, it is deadline week. Members are in multiple committees presenting bills, and our bill author on this bill is presenting a bill in another committee. We are working right now to get an ETA on when he will be here, but I think we're going to take a recess. We will recess the committee until 4 o'clock, and then we will come back and handle the last bill on our agenda. So with that, the committee is in recess. We'll use the same Zoom link when we come back, so just pop back in shortly before 4 o'clock, please. Thank you. And I will call back to order this remote meeting of the House Commerce Committee after our recess. We do have the bill author for our last bill on our agenda in the committee now. I am first going to ask Mr. Brown to take the roll, just to make sure that we have all the committee members back. As I mentioned, this is deadline week, so committee members are attending to multiple committees at the same time. I just want to make sure that we have everybody. It's harder to tell. It's easier to tell when everyone's in the room with you, but when we're doing Zoom, it's hard to tell who's here and who's not. So we will ask Mr. Brown to take the roll.
Chair Stevenson.
Present.
Vice Chair Katiza Watoon.
Present.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Present.
Representative Barr.
Here.
Representative Carlson.
Carlson, present.
Representative Daphne. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, present.
Representative Haley. Representative Cagle.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Lee, present.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly, present.
Representative Lislegard.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
I needed more time to get a shamrock shake.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Thank you. Representative Farr.
Present.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Tice.
Tice, present.
Representative Daphne. Representative Haley.
Present.
Well, we have almost everyone. We certainly have a quorum. So we will proceed to the last bill on the agenda, which is House File 1433, previously laid over. I will move House File 1433 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy. Members, as we had a lengthy discussion about this bill in committee last week, my intention that I talked to the committee about was that we would bring it back and limit any testimony and discussion to any amendments that came back. There are no amendments, therefore there will be no testimony and no further discussion. I will, Representative O'Driscoll, do you have a procedural question?
I do, Mr. Chair. Was that the committee that we were originally going to be sending this bill to, or is it going back to environment? Maybe you can just clarify that for the members.
I can clarify. It was never in environment before. I believe the motion during our last hearing was to lay it over because we knew that we would not be voting on it that day. So it's no change in the motion. It has not been to environment before. That is the bill's next step. Does that answer your question, Representative O'Driscoll?
Thank you for clarification for the members.
Yeah. So as I was saying, we're not going to have testimony or discussion because we had very lengthy discussion and testimony on this bill last week. And I had a good conversation with Representative O'Driscoll before the hearing about how we would proceed today. I am going to give Representative Frederick a chance for some brief closing comments because he did not have that opportunity last week and is custom before a vote to give the author the last word. So I will give Representative Frederick the chance for a brief closing comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, committee members. I know that there was, you know, it's been a week, which is a long time, but I do appreciate the opportunity to present the bill. I think establishing the E15 standard, it helps farmers, it helps the agricultural community, and I think it'll be good for the environment as well. And so any and all support for the bill, I certainly appreciate. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 1433 be recommended to be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy. Mr. Brown will take the roll. The chair votes aye.
Vice Chair Katiza Watoon.
Aye.
Representative O'Driscoll.
No.
Representative Barr.
Nope.
Representative Carlson.
Carlson, aye.
Representative Elkins.
Elkins, aye.
Representative Haley.
Haley, no.
Representative Cagle. Representative Lee.
Lee, aye.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly, aye.
Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard, aye.
Representative Lucero. Representative Olson.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
No.
Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, no.
Representative Richardson, excused. Well, Representative Tice.
Nope.
Representative Cagle.
Aye.
Representative Lucero.
No.
There There being 9 ayes and 7 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 1433 is recommended to be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy. Thank you, Representative Frederick. That is the conclusion of our agenda for today. We will be back on Friday morning at 8:30 a.m. Until then, the committee is adjourned.